Welcome back to the Tank Me Later podcast. I'm your host, Noah Rubin. This is episode 76. And for this one, we're going to be talking about Dynasty Sleepers with Mitch Casey. So let's go ahead and get into it. All right. It has been a few weeks since I've done an episode just because of life, but we are back and hopefully going to get out some more consistent content with the season approaching. With this one being a Dynasty episode, we'll see how many more Dynasty episodes end up happening before the season starts since everybody's kind of in redraft mode at this point. But I'm going to go ahead and bring in Mitch Casey, who's the host of the Ball Boys Fantasy Basketball and AFL Fantasy Podcast. I know he's just been kind of transitioning over from AFL stuff, but he's still a hoops expert. So we had to get him on. Mitch, how are you?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. Yeah, like you said, yeah, transitioning the mind from football, which is Aussie football, for those who don't know, to basketball. But it keeps it fresh for me. You know, you switch over different tactics, different strategy involved in both games. So I feel like I'm coming at it with a slightly more fresh perspective than some people who have maybe been plugging away for months already, sort of seeing things fresh this time of the year. But yeah, ready to talk some hoops, man.
Yeah, man, definitely not having any sort of, I guess, off season from content for you. I guess that's probably ends up being a lot, because I'm thinking like, okay, even though Dynasty season is kind of, you know, during the off season, it's still less going on for most part, but that's when you're doing all your AFL content. So man, props to you, because that's a grind.
Yeah, it is a fair bit, but luckily I enjoy it. So it's it doesn't feel like as much.
It's definitely fun stuff just producing content, but we're going to talk about some Dynasty sleepers. I think you picked out five, I picked out five. And we kind of used a reference of hashtag basketball's sleeper feature. So Joseph Mamone, who's the creator of hashtag basketball, created this. I'm going to just pull it up here so that anybody can see it. So it's easy. It's these crowdsourced dynasty rankings. I mean, it goes very deep. I mean, you can vote right here. Mitch, just while we're doing this, who do you vote for? Terrence Shannon or Dominic Barlow? Who would you prefer in Dynasty?
Give me Dom Barlow.
Sweet.
Let's go.
See, it's that simple. So it ends up, I don't know exactly how quickly it updates their rankings, but it's a good thing for everybody that is playing Dynasty to check this out. It may not be fully, I guess, accurate, but I think it's a very good reference point. I mean, some guys that are kind of hyped up end up being ranked a lot higher than maybe you'd expect them to be ranked. And then some guys that are a little older or tad bit lower, which I think we'll definitely talk about as we talk about some of our sleepers based on this. But I just wanted to show that really quickly. But yeah, as I said, we have five sleepers each. I've kind of split them off with my little slideshow. That way we can kind of start with one of yours and then go to one of mine. We'll go back and forth. But I'm going to go ahead and bring this up so that we can start. Your first sleeper was Paul George, who obviously isn't some deep sleeper that nobody knows about, but people
George Blake.
Oh goodness. All right, so he's definitely still in AFL mode. We'll have to get him back to NBA mode during this episode. But Paul George, why are people sleeping on him?
This is a kind of a guy that I think gets lumped into, obviously he's 34 years old, right? So it's a kind of player that we downgrade a little bit because he's a bit older. I also think that people probably and potentially overly so push him down their draft boards because of some injuries that he's had in the past. He, unlike some other of the older players, though, I feel like his injuries have been the type of injuries that have been just random stuff. It's not like he's a player like a Joel Embiid or a Kawhi Leonard, his ex-teammate, that has a chronic, ongoing, multiple surgeries on the one knee kind of injury. He's sort of had a hamstring, elbow injuries. He obviously had that broken leg a few years ago, just like little things here and there. So I'm not as concerned about the injuries that he's had in the past. Obviously, we do discount him for the fact that he is 34 years old, but he's just signed a max contract for multiple years. So he obviously plans to keep playing at a higher level for a number of years. And he's just a really, really good fantasy basketball player. And he's not a guy that relies on scoring a bunch to get there. He obviously just came from a big three, albeit a big three that wasn't on the court together all that much. But he's coming up with Joel Embiid, who you could say very similar to a Kawhi Leonard from a health point of view. So he can work in a big three situation and put up great fantasy stats. So there's no need for me to really worry or stress about that. He gets the steals, he gets the threes, he hits good free throws, he's a solid passer, he can score well as well. So I think that we're just pushing him too far down, like you can see on the screen there if you're watching along on video. Keeper rank of 144. This is a guy who's potentially a top 20 player this season. And I think over the next two or three seasons, I'm fairly comfortable to say he's going to be a top 40 player for the next few years. And I think that grabbing this guy outside rank 100 is a massive theft.
Yeah, I think this is just one of those examples of, with the Keeper app, is that a lot of people are going to, if they're voting between two players, they're going to say, I don't want the old guy, even though the old guy is actually very, very good at basketball and still has some elite years left. I mean, he's coming off playing 74 games. I think that's the biggest number that stands out to me, aside from, I mean, we know he's good when he's on the floor, but if he's able to stay healthy too, that's ends up being a big step up from pretty much every season with the Clippers and other season with the Clippers. 48, 54, 31, 56 games. Those are not ideal. 74, that plays really well in nine cat leagues. I know you mentioned the fit alongside Joel Embiid, but just with the change of scenery playing alongside Embiid and Maxey, how concerned are you about a potential fall off? Like, obviously he's not going to just become some outside the top 50, outside the top 75 player, but are you concerned at all about some like slight droppage, or are you more of the Tyrese Maxey is going to be the guy that takes the hit?
I think it's going to be a case of, so obviously he's coming in, he's replacing a player like Tobias Harris. So it's not like he's needing to play a totally brand new position. Like, he's not like it's a point guard going to a team where he's going to have to move off ball and share with the point guard. Like, he's still going to do the same thing he's been asked to do. He's just doing it alongside a dominant big instead of alongside two more dominant guards/wings. So, and I think the hope of bringing in a player like Paul George is for someone like a Joel Embiid to not have to do the huge astronomical usage that he was doing to that point. So weirdly enough, I actually think that Embiid is going to be the one that kind of just not drops away, because he's still going to be the star of the team. But the whole purpose of bringing a player like that in is to lighten his offensive load a lot, maybe potentially reduce his minutes. I think it's one of those situations where these players will all kind of just figure it out. And like I said before, it's not like he was coming from a team where he was the only dude. He was sharing the court with other superstars in that team as well. So compared to his role in that scenario to what it's going to be here, I don't see it being too much different compared to maybe someone who went from being the unquestioned best player to this same situation. I think it's a little bit different with Paul George.
Yeah, I agree. I think if there is any drop off in usage for him, I think he'll make up for it by giving more maybe on the defensive end. He's already really good with the steals, but maybe getting it up from a steal and a half to like 1.8, or maybe just improvements in efficiency. He's never been great with his field goal percentage, but if he's the third option and he's getting open catch and shoots because teams are doubling Maxey or doubling Joel Embiid, like, we could see a career high in field goal percentage from him just knocking down open catch and shoots that Tobias Harris wasn't able to at times, which is why Philly fans kind of drove him out of town. We'll move on just for the sake of time, because I know we could probably talk about all these guys for a lot longer than five or so minutes, but for the sake of time, we'll keep it around there. Kyrie Irving, who was my first sleeper, probably my best sleeper, because again, we know who Kyrie Irving is. 122 on sleeper. He's 32 years old. He's coming off a top 10 season. I think that the general consensus or idea around Kyrie Irving was, rightfully so, just like horrible after the way he left Cleveland, the way he left Boston, and his time in Brooklyn. And I just feel like it's so different in Dallas. Like, we're seeing all the good parts of Kyrie without any of the off-court drama. That's a pretty big way of encompassing a lot of different things, but we'll just call it drama because it kept him off the court. But obviously he's still older, still has his fair share of injury issues. It's not horrible. Like 58 games last year, 60 the year before. Like, that's pretty good. It's not great, but it's fine. But he's still a guy that's a consistent top 10 player that is 32 years old. Like, we could still get three more years of borderline top 10 production and probably five of at least top 50 production. Like, Kyrie is still there. And I think this kind of goes into with dynasty managers overvaluing young players, which I think we all buy into the hype at some point and kind of fall victim to that a little bit. But would you rather have 3 to 5 years of Kyrie Irving or 15 years of this young guy that may end up doing nothing? I mean, the idea of it, I think, is what kind of gets people for that. But how do you feel about Kyrie?
Yeah, I think I feel fine about Kyrie. I kind of view him similarly to like a Paul George in a way. The only thing that I can see that potentially if you're drafting now, like a startup dynasty draft, and you were maybe a team that was looking to compete right away, is the Mavs playoff schedule is a little bit less favorable this season. So, but if obviously dynasty, you're looking for multiple years. So, but because he's a sort of a win now type player, it is a slight negative. But aside from that, it's Kyrie Irving. He's always been a nine category darling. He's good across the board. He's efficient. He kind of continues to do that no matter which situation he goes to. And I don't see that changing again this year. Who would you rather draft first, Kyrie Irving or Paul George from our first two players?
For Dynasty or for Redraft?
For Dynasty. Because I think it's pretty close.
I think I'd go Kyrie just with the fact that he is 2 years younger. And that's probably the only reason for it. Because when we could say the situation just off the sense that I've seen Kyrie Irving play in Dallas and I haven't seen Paul George play in Philly. But maybe that would be the only thing. I think it is very close.
Yeah, I think it's close too. I think you've got the added element of, like you said, the drama that sometimes comes with Kyrie. But obviously, we didn't see any drama last year. And, it's not something I think you can accurately predict.
For sure.
Just because it's been weird situation after weird situation. But you've got to take that into a little bit of account and some little injuries here and there. But all in all, like I said with Paul George, it's not been a reoccurring thing for him. So, again, someone who, I mean, at 32, and he's a guy that does not rely on his athleticism. I've said before, he's one of the more skilled players in NBA history. He, I think, will be able to age quite well in the NBA. So, I don't see a steep drop-off coming from him until at least he's sort of 35, 36 would be my best guess. So, yeah, I think at least 3 to 4 years of sort of top 25 to 30 production, I'd say.
Yeah, I agree. Next one you have was Zach LaVine, who I think is kind of a sleeper, no matter what format you're playing in. Like, everybody has just forgotten about Zach LaVine. He's 146 on keeper, 29 years old, was 81st in non-cat last year, obviously didn't play as many games and just didn't have a good season when he was on the court. Why is everybody kind of forgetting about Zach LaVine?
Well, I think we're ready to push him out the door in Chicago, which is always when there's a bit of hesitancy or uncertainty about a player's future in a certain team, or whether it's going to be on a different team. There's always that tendency to just fade them back. But he's 29. We talked about these last couple of guys who are both in their 30s. Like, this guy, I would not consider old. He does have some injury history, but again, last year was terrible, right? 25 games, but the year before that, 77, year before that, 67. And a guy who's still in his 20s, he's a player that scores really well. And we know that's really hard to come by, especially late in drafts. I do think he's a player that can adapt to different situations. He's a guy that doesn't need the ball in his hands all the time. Like, his usage rate last season was 24%, a couple years before that 28 and 29%. So he's not like a 30%+ usage player that demands the ball to still have his value. And in those seasons, he was top 50 both of those years. So I expect he's still got another couple of years of top 50 production and several more years of sort of top 75, top 80 production. Think of like a CJ McCollum sort of type of player who we've been kind of expecting to drop off for a number of years now, but he keeps getting it done. Like, keeps scoring, keeps hitting threes. Levine's free throw percentage is a bit more predictable. You can throw in some assists there as well. So I just think that he's a guy that often gets just pushed out the door a bit too early. And it's just good to remember that this guy is not 30 yet. And it kind of feels like he's lumped in that group with the older players at times. But he is still on the younger side and still, I think, has a good 5 or 6 years left.
Yeah, I mean, he's an all-star talent. I think it's easy to write off a guy after a season like this, but we just can't forget about him because he is very good. I did see this quote. Darnell Mayberry from The Athletic had reported, basically, you know, I'll just kind of summarize. Off-season conversations with Bulls leadership, Levine vowed to not overstep or stunt the development of younger players. Actually, that was a direct quote, not a summary. But I think what is his role with the team is kind of interesting to me because there are so many other guys that are going to need the ball in their hands. That's why I'm a little bit worried about Coby White, just because he came off this really good season. And then Zach Levine's back, and they added Josh Giddey, and Alonzo Ball might be healthy too. So it's like, is there enough touches to go around for everyone? But this could be, and this is just me theorizing here and like creating this whole thing that may just be totally inaccurate, but maybe this quote's coming out in order to kind of help Zach Levine regain some trade value, because it felt like last year there's multiple reports that were kind of saying this, nobody wants to trade for him. But it's like, oh, okay, if he's willing to buy into what the team wants to do, okay, maybe he'll buy into what my team wants to do, or my team needs him to be, you know, more of an off-ball player, buy in a little bit more on defense. Maybe we will actually trade for him. So maybe this is a very like strong start to the year for Zach Levine. Maybe not, he's dropping 25 a game, but he's just playing really solid basketball, which will still play well in fantasy. Then he gets traded elsewhere and it looks like a different. That's my whole little theory that probably isn't going to end up being true at all. But Zach Levine's a good basketball player. And I think whether he stays in Chicago or ends up elsewhere, like, he's good.
Yeah, and it's not like would I be drafting him in the top 70? No, I wouldn't be doing that. But like, as you've got on screen here, Keeper, 146. He's the lowest ranked guy we've talked about so far, behind Paul George, who's 34, behind Kyrie Irving, who's got all the drama associated with him, and he's 3 years older. You know, so you're not paying very much. Like, this is a sleeper or a buy low candidate if you've got an established league. Just don't forget about Zach Levine. And even if he starts the season a little bit sort of unhappy and maybe gets off to a slow start, and who knows, like, it all does depend on where he goes. But I don't imagine that he's going to go to a team and be marginalized. I can't really see that situation happening. I think if he does get traded, he's going to get traded to a place where he's at least a second or third option on an offense, and given still the ability to go out and score 20 plus points per game and kind of do what he's done, maybe to a slightly lesser extent. But again, that might save his body for the rest of the season, and maybe you'll see some healthier seasons coming through. So again, it's a cheaper one that I think people are discounting too much.
Absolutely. Next one I have is Jordan Poole, who's 143, according to Keeper, or I guess on Keeper. 25 years old. At one point, it felt like he was going to be the guy that took over for Steph Curry. And then obviously a lot of drama resulted in him going to Washington, where everybody was like, this guy is going to be a fantasy stud this year. And then he broke everyone's heart last year. Down the stretch, he was good. Final 2 months of the year, top 80 guy, even better as it got later in the season, because he was playing point guard. I think that was a huge factor for him as the assists went up. And that ended up helping his value and in 9-cat leagues, as well as the scoring going up, just because he had the ball in his hands a little bit more. So I thought that was kind of interesting to keep an eye on. Obviously, they replaced Tyus Jones with Malcolm Brogdon and drafted Bob Carrington. So I don't think that Jordan Poole is going to come in and be the point guard from day one, but he's still only 25. I think it's easy to say this guy was one of the most disappointing fantasy basketball players in recent history. There's no way I'm drafting him again, or there's no way I'd want him in dynasty leagues, but he's still really good. Like, it's hard to find players that can like really shoot as well from deep as he did, or has, as well as the free throw line assist points at this low of a price.
Yeah. Look, I'm a little bit jaded by him. I'm one of those people you just met before, because I was one of the people leading the charge on let's go Jordan.
Oh, Poole. I'm right there with you.
I was in on him last year, and I was massively wrong. The thing that concerned me the most, and I do agree that this is too late for him, but the thing that did concern, and I was always last year, I said I liked him more in redraft than I did in Dynasty because I felt that he's going to a situation where he has the chance to start now and produce now whilst Washington kind of rebuilds and retinkers their lineups. And I still think that might be the case. So that would be the only sort of concern that I have with him. And the other thing from like a statistic point of view is his free throw rate just fell off a cliff. And I don't understand why. And when I don't understand why something happened, I'm always hesitant to say that it's going to get better. Because he went from being a player that came off the bench in Golden State in 2022-23, playing 30 minutes a game and shooting 5.1 free throws attempts per game, to last year that being nearly cut in half. And over the final stretch of games, when he was putting up better stats and putting up better assists, the free throws still weren't, they still weren't back up. They were still at that same 2.7 per game over that time. So, until I see that come back up over a sustained period, I am hesitant to say he's going to go to where I thought he was going to go prior to last year. But I do think he is like unfairly being dropped down through, like for example, that 143, I think is way too low, but there are still, I think, some concerns for me, at least based on what we saw last year and based on where this Washington team is headed. I don't think Jordan Poole is going to be their long-term answer. And maybe after a couple of years, as he move back to being sort of a six-man bench type player, that's certainly possible, I think.
Yeah, and obviously this is probably, I'll say probably going to be the lowest his value is in Dynasty because everybody's so frustrated with last season and now everybody's going into the next season with, okay, the expectation is he's not going to be a top 50 player in fantasy basketball. He's probably not going to get, I mean, I'd say top 75 is probably within the range of possibilities for him, but the expectation isn't for him to be this elite player the way it kind of was last year. So if it doesn't go as well, people aren't going to be quite as upset, but if it does go really well, then it's almost like a pleasant surprise. So we got to temper our expectations a little bit with Jordan Poole playing in Washington.
Yeah, but it's a quintessential sort of buy low sort of player when, you know, he's like, he's that, and a few of these guys that we're going to talk about later, it's that post-hype breakout, post-hype sleeper sort of a player, which you're just playing on the psychology of people who were invested last year, invested highly in a certain player and got super disappointed. And sometimes at this point might just be fed up and be like, oh, have him for a bag of chips. Like, I don't care. I want this guy off my team. And you can capitalize on that. So there is always that sort of psychological hurdle for you to get over, but also where you could take advantage of other people who are maybe not as tuned in.
Yeah, no, taking advantage of the emotional state of your league mates is an underrated aspect of Dynasty Leagues. So if anybody's really frustrated with Jordan Poole, slide in. The next guy's one of your next sleeper, probably another guy that was overdrafted last year. Everybody was a little bit frustrated with Walker Kessler, who's 145 in keeper. Walker Kessler was frustrating to me as well, but I still think he's a talented player. Why do you have him as a sleeper?
So this is kind of funny because this is almost the opposite to me of Jordan Poole. I was the guy last year that was pushing back, like, don't draft him in the top 50. Let's not get overexcited. Like, he hasn't done too much yet. He only contributes in a few categories. And I was proven right. It was worse than even I thought about because the minutes I was expecting still to rise, they didn't really, which is frustrating. But he is still someone who did exactly the same things that he did the year before that everyone was getting super excited about. In fact, literally nothing has changed. He's the same guy that was getting drafted way higher than 145 just 12 months ago. He's still 23 years old. And I think there was a lot of like tinkering in Utah with, you know, bringing in John Collins. Obviously, you got Lauri Markkanen there. And I don't know how much longer those types of players are going to be there. You've brought in Taylor Hendricks, who, you know, is a front court sort of a player. But there was just a lot of playing around with different lineups and different experiments that I think Kessler was kind of hurt by this. He still does what he does. He's a rebound, field goal percentage, blocks, elite player, does nothing else. So don't expect that to change. But at 23 years old, you could get a guy who, outside of Wemby, could be up the very pointy end in blocks per game, which is difficult to do. And I think that there's more upside this year than there was last year, considering those pieces that they brought in John Collins and Larry Markkanen are very much on the trade market. And that front court might become less crowded sooner rather than later. And like you said before, you can capitalize on people being frustrated with the player that they expected great things from last year.
Yeah, I mean, the talent to dominate in fantasy, like, well, really in just like three categories, but he has it. Like, if he's on the floor, he's going to rebound, block shots, and shoot a high field goal percentage. He's not going to turn the ball over. There's very traditional center stats, but I agree that he is a slept on talent just coming off last season. But I think my concern, especially if he is in Utah long term, is that they don't want to play him more than 23 minutes per game. And, you know, I think that if he was getting 30 to 32 minutes per game, there wouldn't be any doubt. Like, he would be probably valued about where he was heading into last season, which was incredibly high. And now it's
higher than where he's going in keeper. So,
right.
Yeah, even if he does exactly that, like, it's not the end of the world. And I know that the turnovers can sometimes inflate rankings, but in certain builds, you punt points, you punt threes. Any type of those builds, like, this guy's, even in 23 minutes, like a top 80 player. So out of floor with that for the next 6 or 7 years, I'd definitely take that sort of close to that sort of 100 mark. And then you've got upside on top of that. But yeah, sorry, go on.
No, you're good. Definitely with the current minutes, top 100 for sure. If he was playing 30 to 32 minutes per game, I mean, the sky's the limit. He could be a borderline top 25 player, because we could be looking at over 3 blocks per game with a double-double and a sky-high field goal percentage. Like, that's very good. That's elite numbers right there. But will we ever see that in the modern NBA, where teams are trying to isolate these slower bigs that are down there to block shots and can't really move on the perimeter? Will that limit his minutes a ton? I think that's the only concern I have with him, because he plays really well for fantasy basketball.
Like, for example, if you're someone who's really keen on like a Zach Edey, Donovan Klingon, like, I'd imagine a lot of these guys are going to be going ahead of Walker Kessler, just because they're the new toy, the mystery box. And if those guys are going really early, and this type of player is falling, like, they're the same type of player. It's the same architect, the shape of a player. But I would argue that Walker Kessler has proven it in the NBA level, and he probably, to me, has a clearer path, especially over like a Donovan Klingon, a much clearer path to immediate impact. So I think there's just an element of, the shiny new toy with some of those rookies that probably pushes a player like this back down the board.
Yeah, and not any hype around Edey, I think, is specifically because he's probably going to be the starting center in Memphis, but he's 22. Walker Kessler's 23. It's not like you're getting this super young rookie. Like, they're the same age, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, next one I've got, which actually is another Memphis player, is Vince Williams Jr., who is 235 on keeper, 24 years old. I think that it depends on what Memphis does as to how well he ends up playing in fantasy. I'm in redraft leagues. I'm definitely looking to get him in the last couple of rounds, because I think that this guy's good enough on defense to contend for an all defensive team spot if he's starting. I think that the question is he going to start over Marcus Smart, or are they going to want to start Ja, Desmond Bane, Marcus Smart altogether? We'll see. But I mean, he was very good down the stretch in fantasy. I think his role kind of increased as the season went on, but a guy that can score, knock down threes, can get rebounds, get assists. I don't think he'll need to get many assists with the rest of the team healthy, so that number will go down, but get you a steal and a block, like, well-rounded production. I think that we haven't seen a ton out of him yet. Like, we saw him in an increased role, but I'm excited to see how he looks playing alongside all the standard guys, because I think he could easily be better than Dylan Brooks in fantasy, but be kind of like a Dylan Brooks without all the unnecessary trash talk that kind of pisses other teams off and gets, you know, LeBron to give his all and get you out of a two seed spot pretty early in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great pick by you as well. Like, I was very surprised to see this number, like the 235. I had him down the stretch last year in the industry pickup league, and he was a great player for a long time there. He did get obviously a bump with a lot of injuries in that situation, but it's always great for you to see a young player take their opportunity. Then obviously, he did the most with what opportunity he had, right? So he had the ability to, when the cards were there dealt to him properly, like, he was able to scale up. The assist rose, the scoring was a lot better than I thought that he had in him. Like, that he had nights where he was scoring like 20 plus points per game, which I didn't have in him. The 3-point shooting was better than I thought he had, and the defensive stats, which he's going to hang his hat on throughout his career, I think is not going anywhere. So I do like this pick. The return of a lot of players in Memphis makes this a little bit murky, but I think what we saw last year is definitely enough for him to have forced his way into that rotation and be at bare minimum one of those guys that, when injuries strike, and injuries are always a thing in NBA teams, when anyone, like, he's the kind of player that can just fill a gap. You know, it could be a guard going down, it could be a forward going down. In this Memphis team, it could even be a center going down with Jaren sliding across, and he might be one of the players to benefit straight away. He's got that good flexibility in terms of his skill set, that he's the kind of guy, similar to, maybe to a lesser extent, similar to like a Trey Murphy in like a New Orleans, where anyone goes down and he's the kind of player that benefits. So I think that in most years, at a bare minimum, will lead to someone who's usable in your teams, and definitely should be going ahead of, I think, this sort of keeper rank.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, it's partially Marcus Smart's positional versatility that would open it up for Vince Williams, kind of be a guy that slides into the starting lineup if he ends up being the sixth man. It's like, Ja goes down, okay, Marcus Smart play point guard, Vince Williams play the three. Jaren Jackson goes down, okay, Vince Williams, you can kind of start at the four, but if it ends up being against like a team like the Suns or something, okay, Marcus Smart's probably going to guard KD anyway, just because. So they can figure out matchups. It is kind of crazy how many young guys they're able to just get the most out of. Like, I feel like, considering how disappointing last year was because of all the injuries, getting to see Vince Williams and Scottie Pippen Jr. and GG Jackson like play incredibly well, that has to be so encouraging for Memphis. So I think long term, I'm really excited about what Vince Williams can be, even if it takes 2 to 3 years for him to be the full-time starter. I think what we saw last year was encouraging to me.
Yeah, and I think he's the kind of guy that you might have a bit of time to maybe execute a bit of a buy low on some managers out there that maybe are a bit more impatient if he maybe starts the season on the bench, and, you know, the team's healthy for a bit, like, see if you can pry him away from the fantasy managers who may be a bit more impatient, because there might be a bit of time at the start while things are still a bit up in the air, but I do think long term he'll win out.
Yeah. All right, next guy we have is Orlando Robinson. This was your sleeper, I think. I know he was a guy that was on like the deep dynasty managers' radar a bit heading into last season. He was kind of a guy where it's like, is he the backup center for Bam Adebayo? And then obviously things have changed. Played well with Houston this summer. I believe he's in Sacramento now. Why are you optimistic about Orlando Robinson?
This is kind of a trusting my eye test kind of pick. Again, a player that I had on a few deep rosters last year, and there were moments, frustratingly so, there were moments where Bam did go down, and he even was stuck behind, I think, Thomas Bryant at certain points, and then he came back out, and they were sick of them, and finally gave him a bit of a go. And when he did start for games, there were some stretches of games where he was putting up some really good numbers, really solid assists from a big man. He can hit the three a little bit, great percentages and solid defensive stat. Very, very friendly fantasy game. He's kind of got that good field goal, free throws, a little bit of assists, a little bit of steals and blocks as well. Can hit the three here and there. I don't know if he ever becomes, in fact, I'm fairly confident he's not going to be a guy that is a starter for across his career, but he's a guy that, even in limited roles, if he can play 20 minutes a night, he's serviceable in a deeper dynasty league. And then in those opportunities where he does get the position to start, I think he's got a lot of fill-in potential. So Not something I do a lot of, but if in a deep league, if you have someone like Sabonis on your roster, I think grabbing an Orlando Robinson is very, very much high on your priority list late in drafts, because I expect him to carve out a nice role as the backup and be a very versatile player to provide good fantasy stats. And whether it's on this team or another team, I think he has a solid future in the NBA. And it's just basically banking on those guys that if and when they get minutes, I'm very confident that they will produce usable fantasy stats, rather than trying to waste your time with guys, oh, he should play a bit here, but even if he does, it's like, it's crap. It's not really worthwhile. Whereas I think this is a guy that it's a bit more of a lottery ticket, and if things go your way, it could be a game changer for you.
Yeah, no, I like Orlando Robinson. I like where he ended up after. I mean, he was with Houston for summer league, played really well, but I was like, I don't really see him carving out a ton of minutes in Houston. But Sacramento, now he's got to beat out Alex Len for backup center minutes. Like, I'm a little bit more confident that that can happen than him beating out Steven Adams behind Alperen Şengün. So maybe this is a year where he sees 12 to 15 minutes per game, plays really well in the limited action. The Kings are like, yeah, this guy's pretty valuable. Ends up getting a deal with another team that's willing to give him a larger role next year. So I can kind of see the path there, considering what we have seen in, you know, his opportunities where he was able to start last year and this summer. So I definitely think he is, like you said, he's a deep cut. You're going to have to be very, very patient.
You're probably not, for 12 team leagues, you're probably not bothering, but for those deeper teams, deeper leagues, I think he's definitely someone to at least keep an eye on.
Yeah. You meant he's a lottery ticket. That's a good way to put it. Maybe it'll work out really well. We'll see. The guy I have next is Christian Brown. He has 261 on keeper. I think last year I was kind of expecting him to be a little bit better than he was. But I'm excited about what he's going to do this year. He's 23 years old. And I think he's going to fill in as the starting shooting guard in place of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who is now in Orlando. So we're going to get to see this young guy that can play defense well. He can run in transition, catch passes from Jokic. That tends to make life a little bit easier. We'll see if he can expand his game a little bit. The fantasy numbers weren't great at all last year, but I think this is more of just a good opportunity for a young guy to have success alongside some superstars in Jokic and Jamal Murray, and hopefully that'll help him out, because he did have some games last year when he was taking on a little bit of extra minutes where he did have some good games in fantasy. So I don't know. How do you feel about Christian Brown?
So this is kind of almost, I mean, to a lesser extent, like, he's going to get minutes. I think there's probably little question that I think he's going to have an expanded role this season. So this is kind of the opposite to Orlando Robinson in a weird way, where this is a guy that I don't love the fantasy stat set, but I like the opportunity, right? And I guess this kind of comes down to your philosophy of, do you want to take a punt on a guy and hope he improves his game in an expanded role? Or do you want to take the guy that has the game, has the stat set, just needs the role, just needs the ticket to the playing time? And I've always found it more difficult to project and I guess expect someone to like change their stripes, for lack of a better term. I think for most part, players don't, I mean, there are exceptions, absolutely, but a lot of the time I don't find players will suddenly add something to their game that wasn't there before. So I think he'll improve, obviously, with more playing time. So what did he play last year? 20 minutes per game. You could easily see that come up to 30 minutes per game. But that might take him from the 300th ranked player to the 160th ranked player in 30 minutes. And I don't know how much more upside you're going to have there. So I guess if that's what you're looking for, and if you're in a deeper league where you need that player where you just need them to play every night and play solid minutes, then that's a solid pick. So I guess it's kind of league size dependent for me. He's not a guy I would take at the, you know, a late pick in a shallower league, because I don't know if I see a huge amount of upside.
Yeah, and it might just be me hyperfixating on some of those games down the stretch last year when he was playing more, because he was able to get quite a few steals, hit a handful of threes. I think he's a pretty good rebounder, at least at times, for guard. He had a double-double in the last game of the regular season last year. Had a couple five-plus assist games late down the stretch. So am I just taking this small sample size and saying, hey, maybe he can do this for a full season? Like, Yeah, probably. But since he is 23, I'm going to, I guess, give him a little bit of a benefit of the doubt there. So hopefully it'll end up improving with the situation. Because I think, I mean, it is with the philosophy point about players that may not be great for fantasy, but are going to get the opportunity versus players that we think are great for fantasy, but may not get the opportunity. It ends up being, I don't know, it always ends up going the opposite way, I think, than what we want it to.
Yeah. 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 I think it always comes back down to like league specificity. Like if you're in a league where it's like you've got maybe a deep league, you've got six starters and you've got eight players on your bench, I'm less worried about bothering with these types of guys. Like I want the guy who's going to pop and like put him into my starting lineup and they're going to be a difference maker. Versus if I've got 10 starters and four people on my bench, well, then I'm going to need a lot more guys that are serviceable week to week. And a player like Christian Brown to me is much more valuable in that situation, because especially if, you know, you're a 12 or a 16 league or an 18 league team league, then it's, you're going to need those guys who that becomes you sort of late middle rounds instead of like a late round flyer type. So I think it's very much dependent on how you set up.
Yeah, definitely. The next, I think this is your last sleeper that you have. Then I have one more. Trace Jackson Davis from Golden State is 185 on keeper. Had a pretty strong rookie year after really sliding in the draft a lot. Why do you have Trace Jackson Davis as a sleeper?
I just think it's a similar type of argument too. I think this guy's got a good per minute production. Like, so he was 180, he's 185. Last year he was 200, you know, you got 212th in a nine category ranking. He did that in 17 minutes a night. He just has that really classic big man build with field goal percentage, rebounds, solid blocks. And I think he's a really, like, Golden State played Kevon Looney as their starter for years. So they're not a team that really looks for high-paid superstar big man. And Jackson Davis kind of fits that mold perfectly for me. So I think there's a very real chance that he either starts this year straight off the bat or wins that starting role sooner rather than later. Now, the fit next to Draymond can be a little bit clunky, but we've seen, again, Draymond play next to someone like a Looney in the past because of their ability to playmake and things like that. I think Jackson Davis can make that work. And it's just a player that at 24 years old, again, you're not going to get anything out of position or anything funky, but I just don't think we've caught up enough with how good Jackson Davis can be. And I think the improvement in his minutes this year simply is going to have him beating that spot fairly comfortably with upside to improve even further. So I think he beats this rank this year. And then at 24, you know, you're building in a few other years that you can improve on that.
Definitely. I think he's not, you know, a guy coming off a rookie year where he's like 20 years old. Obviously, he's 24. Like he's, but is he a guy that can play till he's 32, 34? Okay, like that's still like 8 years of Trace Jackson Davis. Like that's not as, like you're drafting this like old guy that's on like the last few years of his career. He's 24. He's not that old. But I think the main question I have for him specifically for this year, and could end up being a longer term question, is what the heck is Steve Kerr going to do with the starting lineup? Is he going to start Draymond at center with Jonathan Kuminga, or is he going to start, you know, all three of them, maybe take Andrew Wiggins off the bench? Is he going to even want to start Andrew Wiggins at all? Like, this could change every single game because he wasn't afraid to switch out the starting lineup at all last year. So definitely the minutes are going to go up. The blocks are great. Field goal percentage is great. He's a little undersized, so the rebounds are kind of eh. But yeah, I mean, I could see him getting 25 minutes per game this year and doing that for 8 years and being a borderline top 100 guy with upside to be even better than that, with a lot of it coming from the blocks and field goal percentage. So I do really like him. I think he should have gone, I mean, at least early second round in the draft, but he ended up going with, I think it was second to last pick because there was a couple teams that lost their second round pick that year. So yeah, no, I really like Trace Jackson Davis. I think he's about to have a good year.
Yeah, I agree. I think, look, there'll definitely be some headaches, and Steve Kerr does. He's not afraid to mix and match things from time to time. Look, there's a few new pieces in this team as well, but a few older players as well. Mm-hmm. So as they, you know, drop off. And a player like Andrew Wiggins, like, he was pretty horrible last year. So it wouldn't surprise me if he's sort of come off the bench and things like that. But that, even if he's not starting, I still think that this, what was it, 17 minutes that he played last year, I see that as absolute floor. And if you're getting him close to this rank here, that's basically what he did last year, with upside to burn after that. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. My last one is Keon Ellis, who is just inside the top 300 on keeper. Probably wasn't a guy last year, even early on this past season, that I would have been talking about as a sleeper, but I absolutely loved what he did this past season, especially down the stretch when he kind of took over as the starting shooting guard when Kevin Huerter went down, and then played well in the playoffs, showed a bit more offense this summer during summer league. But the steals and blocks during like fantasy playoff season was so huge for me in my home dynasty league that I was like, okay, yeah, I'm in on Keon Ellis, because I had so many injuries, but he helped me pretty much single-handedly win steals and blocks that week, because it was when he had a a five-block game, a four-steal game, like back-to-back. So I was like, yeah, this guy is going to play really well in fantasy. And now he's hitting – I mean, he had an 8 3-pointer game down the stretch last year as well. Yep. 26-6-5-2-2 with 8 threes. Like, that's great for fantasy. Personally, I think he will start – at shooting guard this year with Malik Monk as the sixth man and Huerter off the bench. We'll see if that ends up happening. Maybe it doesn't end up working out like that. Maybe they want Huerter in there to give them a little bit more spacing with DeMar coming in. But I think Keon Ellis is deserving of a starting spot, and potentially long-term. He's only 24, and he's a guy that has already shown a lot defensively and spaced the floor and then chip in a little bit here and there. So I think he's a great guy for fantasy and in real life.
I love this pick personally, and this is my kind of guy. I'm trying to be a bit more aware of my biases these days. And the guys who get in there like a Jalen Suggs, De'Anthony Melton, Alice Caruso, these like gritty defenders that just annoy people and defend and, you know, hit the three from time to time. Like these are kind of my guys. So. I can see him in that kind of a mold of player. I don't know if he's ever going to be a super high minutes guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of see him, you know, for majority of his career, sort of between that sort of maybe 24 to 28 minutes a night. And the thing that impressed me, and I think that will, if he can continue this or even not drop off too far from this, if he continues to shoot the three as well as he did, like he shot 41.7% from three last year, which compared to the year before where he shot 25%. In the summer league, he was shooting like 31% before that. So he was never really renowned as a three-point shooter, but improved that massively. Like I said, had an 8-3 game. If he can continue that and, you know, kind of render a player like Huerter redundant almost, that's going to really make sure that he's staying in starting lineups, and he's going to be there for his defensive versatility. And I think there's definitely a use for a player like this. And at 294, he's already beating that rank in, 17 minutes a game. I do think that there's definitely an outside potential that he starts, or maybe not even that outside. I'd almost predict it at this stage that he's starting there. It could definitely be a few different players. And you've also got Malik Monk you've got to consider, who's basically playing starters minutes but coming off the bench.
Right.
He'll have to fit in around that, but you're paying next to nothing for him. And I think there's definitely a huge role for him for multiple years. So, no, I like the pick.
Yeah, and just looking at his summer, because I know I said that he showed a little bit more offense this summer. I always messes up my head. He had a 29-point game this summer and then two really bad offensive games, really bad just games in general. But he's playing on a Kings Summer League team that didn't have like any talent at all. I think they had two separate Summer League teams, if I'm not mistaken, unless that was a different team that did it. But I think the Kings did at least at one point.
That's never going to be.
Like, exactly.
He's not ever going to be asked to do that. So I'd almost ignore that. I mean, you're watching that to potentially see if there's going to be something else that pops, which I don't think we should be expecting. We shouldn't expect him to be developing anything outside of what we've seen, but what we've seen, I think he can just continue to improve on that to enough where he earns those minutes more consistently.
Yeah, and I think it was the the 31% from three that you mentioned from the summer league, that I was like, it was, he had a good game and then he had two bad ones, but it was really because he had nobody playing around him. He was trying to be the superstar on a team. That's not his role. He, if he showed it a little bit, but no, we're drafting him to get defensive stats. We're drafting him to get threes, and he can do all that. And plus a little bit extra in the other categories to help both us and the Kings.
Yeah,
but
I was just to say, just before we finish up, last 2 months, he was a top 100 player in 25 minutes. due in large part because he nearly hit two threes, 1.5 steals, 0.7 blocks, two assists. Like, think of your Herb Jones sort of type of player. Mm. So, pretty easy value there, I think.
Yeah, did all that with low usage. So it's not like adding a DeMar is going to impact him all that much. I think the main factor is Mike Brown going to start him? Or is he going to start Kevin Herter? Is he going to decide to switch up and start Malik Monk? Probably not. But Keon Ellis, if he can start and play, say, 26 to 28 minutes per game, I'm going to love that. But
absolutely.
All right. That is our 10 quick dynasty sleepers. Mitch, before I let you go, what content should we be looking out from you in the coming weeks?
So I've been doing a bit of content the last couple of weeks on some more, I guess, macro things in fantasy, talking about punting, talking about things to avoid doing in your drafts, like the mistakes that a lot of people I see making. Whereas we're going to start to get into the more specifics over the next few weeks. So talking about a lot of redraft content. So my redraft sleepers, my redraft bus, some players that I could see breaking out this year. We're going to continue to do lots of more mock drafts, as well as a lot of the, eye-catching titles coming up with my must draft players and do not draft lists and things like that close to the start of the season. And then I might even throw in some drafts that I have coming up. I know we're hopefully doing the industry pickup league again. So I'm going to throw in a few real drafts if I can, ones where I might not be talking too much, but if you want to see a man sweat and swear on screen, you can come and watch those because they get intense.
Absolutely. Well, everyone, if you're not already, give Mitch a follow at Ballboys Fantasy on Twitter. Mitch, I appreciate you hopping on with me.
No worries, man. Always fun to talk hoops.
Absolutely. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Tank Me Later podcast, and I will see you next time.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.